What's up? This is Movies On Up, episode 51. Bob's a special kind of friend, the kind that drives you crazy. Dave, also a special kind of friend. He's the kind that hosts a weekly podcast with me.
Yep, that's me.
That's Dave. That's our tagline for this week. Bob's a special kind of friend, the kind that drives you crazy. If you are the kind of person that can figure out what tagline that movie may be from, and here's a hint, it's pretty self-evident, especially in the first word of the tagline. But if you can deduce where that is from, send it off to us in an email, moviesonup@gmail.com. You can leave it on our Facebook page, which can be found at facebook.com/moviesonup. Or you can tweet your answer directly at Dave, at moviesonup. If you are correct, and if we pick you, there may be a prize package in your very near future. Not really sure exactly what that's going to entail. We're still working the details out on that. But first things first, you got to make your guess on what our tagline for the week is this week. Bob's a special kind of friend, the kind of friend that drives you crazy. Drives me crazy when nobody answers that. So do me a favor. Do me a solid. Just submit your guesses any of the ways that I just laid out. Well, that's our tagline contest for the week. We've got a couple other fun things going on later this week. Actually, later today, in full disclosure, we're going to do our box office bash fantasy draft. Dave and I are going to kind of have a draft, and then we'll just kind of read the listener submissions, of which we have over a dozen.
I think about a dozen.
Okay, fair enough. Give or take. But for those of you that did fill them out, thank you. We appreciate it. We'll be reading those. That episode will be up probably Wednesday or Thursday. If you haven't submitted your list, can people still get them in
until
by Thursday?
Thursday. Okay. Well, Thursday afternoon.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's fair. So, I mean, if you're just listening to this episode on a Tuesday and you think, oh, damn it, I forgot, we'll leave the door open for you stragglers for just a little bit. So definitely get it in to us by Thursday afternoon. Box Office Bash, of course, is our summer contest that is going to focus solely on what movies make at the box office in the summer. Dave, what did movies make at the box office this weekend?
Pain and Gain, number one. I think we set the over-under at 15. Believe we both took the over. We were right. $20.2 million on a $26 million budget. So that's Michael Bay doing a smaller budget movie, and it's going to pay off. Marky Mark, The Rock, people coming out to see them. Oblivion saw a 52% drop all the way down to $17.8 million for second place. It sits at 65 after 2 weeks. With everything happening next week and kicking into that summer, it might fall fast. It might not even hit $100 million. It's on a $120 million budget. 42 in third place, another $10.6 million. It's just under $70 million on a 40 budget. The Big Wedding, the other wide release, $15 million over-under. We both took the under. We were both correct. $7.5 million. Here's where that's interesting, though. The Big Wedding, just stuff, just people at a wedding, $35 million budget. And you look at the star power. Okay, Robert De Niro, not as big right now as The Rock or Marky Mark. I don't think De Niro's packing them into the seats as much as either one of them. Nobody in that movie is. How is that movie a $35 million budget? That's movie making gone wrong there.
Catering, I can't explain.
So, I mean, that just shows that there's a lot of bad decisions out there. That movie made $35 million, only brought in $7.5 million, so it's going to have a tough time making that domestically. In The Croods, it's up to $163 million. It brought another $6.7 million this week for fifth place. And limited release Mud, only 363 screens. It just outside the top 10 at $2.2 million.
That was the Matthew McConaughey when he like lost all the weight.
Yeah, McConaughey. Jeff Nichols directed, the director of Take Shelter. It brought in $6,000 per screen, just behind Pain and Gain. So on a per screen average, it would have been in second. But that was pretty much it for the box office. Kind of the calm before the storm, because this weekend kicks off summer season, and overseas got kind of a taste where Iron Man 3 opened overseas to $200 million. So
yeah, that's not bad.
Yeah. So
it must have been the extra Fang Bing Bing.
Bing Bing scene, yeah.
Is that her?
Yeah.
Okay. I figured it was, but I didn't want to confuse my Asian actresses. summer movies are going to be kicking off this week with The Iron Man. A couple weeks ago when we did our summer preview, we talked a bit about some summer vacation type movies. We did our top five favorite vacations gone wrong. That was kind of a spinoff from our summer preview issue. Some more vacations going wrong, and that would be the new Vacation reboot or sequel, requel, whatever you want to call it, set to begin filming in July, written by John Francis Daly and John Goldstein. Apparently, it has been delayed indefinitely by the studio due to a disagreement over whether it should be rated R or PG-13. For now, stars Ed Helms and Christina Applegate still remain attached.
Yeah, this is interesting. It doesn't... Nobody's come out and said who's on what side. Obviously, PG-13, you get a larger audience. You can market it as a family thing. The originals were R. So I don't know who, if the writer-directors want to go R and the studio wants... I'd assume the studio wants to go PG-13 because that's where the money is. It's just interesting it happened so close to filming. I mean, filming's a month and a half away. You need to get it resolved or else you're going to lose your stars because Ed Helms has a lot of stuff going on.
You hit the nail on the head. If you want to have it for the widest possible audience, well, yeah, then you go with the PG-13. But... We saw this quite a bit with horror remakes. I believe Prom Night was one of them. There were a few that were remakes of movies, you know, from the 80s that were rated R, but to try and bring in that tween crowd, they went with the PG-13 rating. And I think for movies that maybe like the Prom Night remake, where there wasn't necessarily a large cache of people waiting to see it, I think that might have been a good idea. I can't see this being a hard R, but I wouldn't,
here's the thing.
Go out of my way to make it a PG-13.
The originals were R's. They were R's in a time when not a lot of R comedies were popular at the time. So they came out then. You hire these writers. They did Horrible Bosses, which was a hit. That was an R-rated comedy. They wrote Incredible Burt Wonderstone, which was a bomb, which was PG-13 comedy. And right now, R-rated comedies are hot. Like, we talked about Weird Science last week, where they're going to take that 80s kind of Brat Pack-type movie and convert it to an R-rated modern comedy. And that's what... They're making money now.
The originals being rated R, you know, if they came out today, you could make the argument that there's a possibility that you could pretty easily get those to PG-13. They weren't that bad.
No.
It took a lot less to get rated R, you know, in kind of the mid-80s, mid to late-80s than it does now. So, I mean, I wouldn't go out of my way to make this PG-13, but I think you could do one that's very similar to the original.
The way the story is, it doesn't have to be R.
Right.
For this one, I don't think it matters either way. And to put it in Jeopardy, the casting is perfect. The casting is absolutely perfect. To put that in Jeopardy over this... kind of a stupid argument. I don't understand it.
Because it does seem silly to squabble about.
I think it's not Sex Drive. It's not Hangover. It's not something that has to be... You're not making Superbad here. Like, it's not... It doesn't have to be raunchy. Okay, cut a couple jokes, cut a couple F-bombs, but you could still toe that line. You could get away with a lot in PG-13. I just think the whole thing just seems stupid.
Obviously, it's coming down to a money argument. It's, well, do we think the movie... can make X as an R or can it make X as a PG-13? That's why movies get made. It's not to entertain us. It's to make money. So I understand there's a place for the dollars and cents argument. But if you screw around and you lose your stars, you're going to make a lot less money, whether it's PG-13, R, G, it doesn't matter. And you said it right at the top. Ed Helms is a very busy dude. If they lose him, maybe they could replace him with somebody better. But, I mean, you'd have to really do... a hell of a job to find somebody that would be as good as, if not better than Ed Helms.
Yeah, on short notice.
Right, exactly.
And I mean, what window are we looking at? Like, I don't know his schedule, but he doesn't have, you know, he doesn't have the office to get back to, but he has other stuff. He's kind of hot right now. Hangover 3 is going to make a lot of money, and it's going to keep him in high demand, so... You kind of got to strike while you can.
Hopefully this argument will be settled within a couple weeks. It just seemed to come up out of nowhere, so hopefully it kind of just dissipates out of nowhere as well. Justice League movie, perhaps, gone wrong. Zack Snyder, according to Zack Snyder, will be offered the Justice League directing job if and only if the Man of Steel is a hit.
I don't see any way Man of Steel isn't a hit, just because of the hype. That doesn't mean it's going to be good. That doesn't mean Zack Snyder is the right one for Justice League. Zack Snyder cannot tell a story. He absolutely cannot tell a story. He tried. The only comparable story you can see that he attempted was Watchmen, which was a lot of story. Justice League is going to have as much story as Watchmen did, and it was a mess. It was a train wreck. It didn't make any sense. If you hadn't read the book, there was no way. There were parts where you'd have been completely lost. But he's not the only one that said that. I mean, other directors that have worked with WB, it seems to be kind of a thing that if this is a hit, it's Snyder's job. But if this is a hit, how much of that is due to Goyer and Nolan, and how much is due to Snyder? Snyder does Justice League. He's not bringing Goyer and Nolan with him.
It's not like they haven't offered Justice League to Nolan. So, I mean, at that point, no matter whether it's Zack Snyder or whether it's Chris Nolan, whomever makes Man of Steel a hit, if he gets the job based on that, you can't fault Zack Snyder for it. I mean, Nolan said no. So it doesn't matter.
I'm not going to blame Zack Snyder for taking the job. I'm going to blame the studio for offering it to him because he's never done anything with substance.
Well, maybe not. But I mean, if you're going to blame the studio, that's fine. But don't you have to take the specter of Christopher Nolan out of the equation, because they offered it to him and he said no. So they do have to move on. They've got to get somebody else. And again, this seems like a dollars and cents thing, where not if Man of Steel is good, if it makes X amount of money, then it'll be determined a hit, and then he'll be offered the chance to do something that's going to be even bigger of a risk, I think.
Yeah.
To pick somebody based on whether their movie, this one in particular, is financially successful, to essentially captain the rest, what is going to be a much bigger franchise. If you say a bigger franchise than the Superman franchise, well, it is, because it's Superman, it's Batman, it's essentially, you know, DC's identity going forward. To base that on whether or not people come out to see the Superman movie is kind of rough. I would prefer it if they said, you know, let's just see if Superman does okay, then we'll make a Justice League. If it doesn't, you know, just why have the project altogether?
I don't like anything they're doing with Justice League. It all feels like it's going to be rushed. If you want to do Justice League, why aren't Flash and Wonder Woman in development
having their
now?
Spinoff movies first?
Yeah, it just all seems terribly not well thought out.
Well, I mean, it is almost in every way the inverse Marvel, where
the exact opposite of
what
Marvel.
Yes, everything
did.
They did and have done successfully. It seems like Warner Brothers and DC is saying, well, we're going to do it the exact opposite way, and we'll be just as successful, if not more. And that's, again, pretty risky.
It's the wrong hands. And I think Snyder's a terrible choice, not just because I don't like him. I don't think he can handle the scope. But the studio likes him because he works fast, he works relatively cheap, and he gets results. But with a franchise like this, it should be more than that. I realize the business side, it's not more than that. It should be. Whedon didn't make the most sense money-wise. Like, Whedon didn't have this big box office track record. That paid off well for him. And it worked. Because you got the right man behind it. Even, like, Matthew Vaughn would be somebody that takes it under, that's shown they can handle story and they can handle characters and take it. But he hasn't done any of that.
You're right. There are other people that probably would be better. But I feel like the Matthew Vaughn thing is kind of run its course, too. At some point, if you're the Cavs and you need to hire a head coach and you talk to Phil Jackson, he tells you no. You talk to Stan Van Gundy, he tells you no. At some point, you've got to have a coach.
Well,
you got to hire Mike Brown.
But what they had wrong was they essentially had the offensive coordinator and the defensive coordinator and said, hey, we want you to coach this. They had the script. They had Will Beal's script. So you're coming on, you don't even get to pick your coaching staff, to keep up with the analogy.
Right.
Like, so you're coming on and you have this script that ended up being scrapped because the studio finally realized it's terrible. That's why they couldn't land a director, because they were so behind the script that they later admitted was terrible. Where instead of going out and saying, hey, we want to go into this after Superman, here's how Superman leads into it, run with it.
But you think even now, with a different script, you think that if they went back to Christopher Nolan, you think he hasn't read the new script? Of course he has. If he wanted to do it, he'd be the director.
Yeah.
He doesn't want to do it.
No.
Maybe they haven't made other contact with Vaughn. Affleck read the bad script. He didn't want to do it.
And they kind of stopped everything with the bad script. So it's not like Superman's going to do well, and they're going to say, okay, let's try again with Justice League. Let's find somebody.
Maybe they have. Maybe they have quietly reached out to these guys with the new script. We don't know that. But, I mean, they definitely have done their diligence. They've just whiffed on everybody. And at some point, you got to have somebody direct it because they need it done. If Zack Snyder's the guy, somebody's going to direct this movie, whether it's Zack Snyder, Alex Lynn, what is that guy? The Fast and the Furious kid, Lynn.
Justin Lin.
Or you or me. Somebody's got to direct it. And, you know, if Superman makes money, if it becomes a hit, then I guess it would be hard to argue against
Snyder. I don't see any way that Superman isn't a hit. I really don't.
Well, this may help. Starting on May 18th, select Walmart stores will be pre-selling tickets for the Man of Steel showings on June 13th, one day before its release. There will be just over 6,300 special screenings in a little over 2,300 theaters nationwide. Each ticket will include a pre-order code for Blu-ray or digital download of an exclusive Man of Steel comic by writer David S. Goyer. Could this become a common thing?
It's weird. I really don't know how I feel about this because Walmart's gone into the pre-selling of DVDs. They started about 6 months ago pre-selling DVDs like 2 weeks ahead of time where you can you pay for it in store. It ships to you on the street date. Now they're you could pre-order Iron Man 3 right now. You could pay for it and wait for it. So, I mean, they're getting that far ahead of the game. This is just another thing. I mean, I think you have to combine the two. Because if I'm going to pay, you know, $9 to see it one day early, I don't know that that's going to be worth it for me. If I could pay $22, see it one day early, and get the DVD or Blu-ray shipped to me the day it's released, that makes a little bit more sense to me. I pay once, I'm all taken care of with this movie.
I think in a perfect world, that would be great, but I'm not surprised that you're seeing these pre-sales. I mean, I came from managing a video game store, and they were hardcore on pre-sales of things that were years ahead of time. And at first, it was kind of a rough go, but then they started giving you exclusive in-game content. And I think that, you know, having the comic here helps a lot. I think that's great, but what would be better, you know, content than... Well, here's a movie ticket. Like, you put down, you know, you pay for the DVD today, even if it's more than $22, even if it's, you know, a brand new Blu-ray would be $30. If I paid $40 and I got my movie ticket and I got the Blu-ray and maybe some kind of web comic or, you know, whatever, I'd probably, for a movie like Iron Man, I'd totally do it. I know I'm going to see Iron Man anyway.
Yeah. I mean, a movie that you know you're going to watch and you know you're going to buy. It makes sense, but they're not there yet.
And it makes all the sense in the world for the studios to do that, because if they get, you know, however many tickets sold before the opening day, you know those people are going to be there. If you wait until...
And if they're not, doesn't matter.
Right, you've already got their money. But if you wait until Friday... Now, there's nothing else coming out opposite Iron Man that I'm going to go see instead. But if you wait until Friday night and give me the opportunity to pick something else because I've either missed the showing or there's two things going on at the same time and I can pick one or the other. Yeah, maybe 9 times out of 10 I pick Iron Man, but that 1 time out of 10 is money out of their pocket. But if I've already got it pre-sold, you've got my money 10 out of 10 times.
And that's where Fandango has helped a lot with movie sales, because people are paying for their tickets ahead of time because they don't want to show up to a sold-out show. And then instead of bailing... They're already invested their money. Instead of saying, I'm going to go to the movie Saturday with 5 of my friends, and then bailing on it, you've already paid for it, so you're more likely to go. And if you don't, who cares? They have your money. Where this is hitting a different audience, because somebody who's going to buy a movie ticket from Walmart may not be as inclined to Fandango.
Sure.
Or to do the online shopping. Yeah. So it's just weird that these pre-shows...
Have it both ways.
Yeah, And these pre-shows are exclusive for Walmart. I don't know when they're going to unleash that. Say Tinseltown showing a 7 o'clock 3D Superman showing, then you could buy the tickets at the local Walmarts. That's the only way to get tickets
and
for that.
And if it doesn't sell out,
they're
going to
open those up
eventually. Yeah.
They're going to open them up, but I don't know how long, when. Do you have to wait until that night and then buy them?
If I was a theater, I would not want to, but I'm sure there'd be some kind of a contract.
Yeah, so.
But kind of the back end of this as well, like the DVD pre-sales, like you could conceivably have, if this was in enough retailers, between DVD sales, which you'd get before the movie releases, tickets, advanced ticket sales, you could make your budget back before the movie ever hits theaters. So you could, again,
you
feel
could be
really
on a good start towards it. Yeah,
sure. Maybe for Iron Man, maybe that's rough. But you know, then again, maybe it's not. Not that we're waiting in limbo to see if Iron Man would get an Iron Man 4, but you could see something greenlit like immediately based on, you know, pre-sales on tickets and pre-sales on DVD, because you know I'm going to make X amount of dollars on this. I already have it. It's in my hand.
And I'm just wondering how long, if it does work out, how long until it's not just your major releases.
Would you really do that for a small movie,
though?
It's
not something I would do. I wouldn't do it for this.
I'd do it for Man of Steel.
Then again, I don't really Fandango even. I go to movies with Jason
either.
West, and he Fandangos. So
he does it for you.
If I'm going, I go in the matinee. There's no need for it.
Sure.
So, like, for me, it's not something, and I don't need to go the day before. Like, it's the showing's the 13th. The movie opens the 14th. That doesn't it doesn't appeal to me, but I can see the appeal. I also wonder what it's going to do to the box office numbers, because all those sales go towards Thursday. That doesn't go towards the weekend. But, I mean, you're still making the money.
I don't think they're going to care.
No, you're still making the money, but...
In other comic book news, whom will guard the galaxy from Lee Pace? Lee Pace, who, as Dave puts an editorial note here, is awesome, has signed on as the villain in James Gunn's Guardian of the Galaxy. Ophelia Lovabond was also added to the cast this week, joining Chris Pratt, Zoe Saldana, Dave Bautista, and Michael Rooker.
Lee Pace's name was up there for
the
Star-Lord a while ago, and they liked him enough that they brought him back for this. And it gets me excited. They haven't announced. It's apparently, rumor has it, he's going to play the Collector, which is one of Thanos' right-hand men. I'm excited for it. I mean, I love Lee Pace. He's had a good year quietly. I mean, he was in The Hobbit and Lincoln, but Lee Pace isn't really a household name yet. I think this movie is going to break a lot of careers. I think it's going to elevate Chris Pratt to leading man status. Lee Pace is going to be... I think
Dave Bautista.
Yeah. I'm excited for it. Lee Pace in a villain role is not really something I've seen before.
No, it's going to be a little bit of a stretch from the pie maker, I feel like. But the guy's got talent.
The closest he's ever come to inflicting evil on people was starring in Marmaduke.
Oh, well done. Ratchet and Clank finally clanking their way to the big screen. After a decade in play and 11 games released, the family-friendly intergalactic adventures are finally headed to your local Cineplex in 2015. Jerrica Cleland, cinematographer of Arthur Christmas and Space Chimps, will direct from a script by TJ Fixman, who is also a senior writer at the studio that created the video game duo. The game cast of James A. Taylor, David Kaye, and Jim Ward will voice the characters.
We often ask, and everybody asks, can a video game movie work? I think this might be the one that answers that question. You're taking the creative minds behind it. You're taking the original cast. This has kind of an advantage because it's going to be animated. But if any video game movie is set up to become a franchise and become a huge hit, it's this one, and it's shocking that it's taken so long.
That's what I mean. It seems a little late. I was absolutely shocked there were 11 Ratchet and Clank games.
But that's the thing, is you can release a new one 6 months before or a year before it comes out.
Oh, and I'm sure they will.
Yeah, and you build up that hype. You could release two before then.
Oh, yeah.
And get the name out there again, and then put out this movie that's very on par with the video game. And even if you don't play video games, I would watch this. I don't play the Ratchet and Clank games, but the characters have always seemed fun to me. Like, it seems like it could be just a fun movie.
And if you pre-order the PS4 video game, you get your movie ticket for free.
Yeah.
That's coming. Like, I can already see that.
I don't understand how this has taken so long, but if any video game movie is gonna succeed and turn video game movies into a something people view as a moneymaker, it's this.
I wish I was $2 million richer. Zach Braff apparently is. He has taken to Kickstarter to fund his long-awaited Garden State follow-up, Wish I Was Here. He asked for $2 million to prepare for a late summer start date and a festival season release. It was funded in less than 3 days.
I'm on board with this. There seems to be a negative reaction about people going to Kickstarter and established people going to Kickstarter. I want a Garden State follow-up. I said it with Veronica Mars movie. If Kickstarter is the only way for me to get a Veronica Mars movie, okay, yes. And Zach Braff, this campaign is awesome. The awards giving out are very reasonable. Like, they're what you donate, you get a lot in return, so you get your money's worth. And he's already put a lot of work into it. Like, he's already got the script. He's got producers. He's got set designers. He's got a lot of stuff in place already. So it's not like he's just, like, laying around on the couch waiting for $2 million. He's put a lot of work and stuff into it already.
Yeah, I think the argument is becoming, or at least what I was reading, is Hollywood ruining Kickstarter? And I don't know that I would consider, like, a Veronica Mars movie or even a Zach Braff movie Hollywood. In its sense, Kickstarter was made for indie projects to get off the ground. Now, these are indie projects, especially with Zach Braff. This is how he's trying to get it funded so he can keep creative control. And his fans want that. That's why they gave him $2 million.
He's upfront about it. He has shopped it to studios. He could sell this to a studio. By selling it to a studio, he loses Final Cut. He doesn't get to... The movie released isn't necessarily going to be his 100% release. And he loses control of casting. Because a lot of deals are contingent on, we'll buy the movie, but you have to cast one of these actors. This way, he can raise the money himself, put his own money into it to make up the difference, which he said he's already put in some good bit of money, cast whoever he wants, make the exact movie he wants to make. There's already enough of a crowd of people that want to see it. And to be honest, if it comes out as well, I mean, he's got the name, he's got the success. He probably makes that $2 million back in just a distribution deal.
Well, I mean, I feel like all the people, you know, that are going to give... I don't know, was a copy of the movie, or was anything, if you donated like $10 or whatever?
It's actually a really awesome,
do you have it?
I don't have it pulled up right now, but...
Because, I mean, if it was like that, where if I donated $10 or $20, we'll say, $25, whatever it is, could I get a copy of the DVD when it released? Realistically, it's probably not going to be in the Youngstown market. I would absolutely do that. Or if it was... I only had to donate $10, and then if it is going to come around, I would totally go back and see it. I mean, I think that, you know, if I want a movie enough to give somebody money up front to get it made, I want it to see it enough to go out and support it when it's in the theater.
Yeah, and for $10, you get a production diary, which is pretty much every week he sends you an update on filming, which to some people that's cool, and for only $10.
Right.
And you get a PDF of the script right before it comes out. $20, you get to stream the soundtrack ahead of time, and he'll send a new playlist every weekend. For $30, this is where it's really cool that I haven't seen on a Kickstarter before. He has live screenings across the world. So you pay the $30, before it's released wide, there's going to be three scheduled times, at least three, that if you sit at your computer, you can watch it.
So you'd even
with
have
him
to,
and people all over the world.
So you don't even have to go to New York or Chicago.
No.
That is pretty rad then. I mean, that is essentially, here's my $10 to make it. Here's my $10 to see it. Now, sure, it's going to be streaming, but that really makes it all inclusive. And I'd be pretty jazzed about that. Plus all the other stuff, you know, you get the production blog, you get the script, you get the, and I'm not trying to, you know, be a honk for Zach Braff and tell you should go spend $30 for him to get his movie made.
It's fair, though.
Right, it is.
I mean, I've seen a lot of Kickstarters that $10 gets you a thank you.
Right.
You know, this, for $10...
And there's nothing wrong with that. I mean,
no,
sure.
If that's all you... Because sure. You do have to pay out the money to do all of these stuff. So
yeah.
That's... I mean, with Kickstarter, it's a weird animal because they take like 30% of what you make, and then you have to pay for everything that you've promised these people. But this is one of the more fair... incentive programs I've seen.
And for it to hit 2 million in 3 days, I mean, I think that that does play into it. In addition to people just wanting this project to get off the ground, it's an easier sell when, you know, you're able to come back and say, well, this is the value for your $30.
Yeah.
Speaking of value and projects getting off the ground, we've got The Passion of the Expendables. After courting Mel Gibson to direct The Expendables 3, Sylvester Stallone has moved on and settled on Patrick Hughes to direct the threequel.
Australian director. 2 years ago, he directed my favorite movie of that year with Red Hill. I have no interest in the Expendables movies, but I like that Patrick Hughes was hired, and I hope that it leads to something more, because Red Hill was what could have
been...
Like
an Expendables 4?
Red Hill was what could have been kind of a dumb action movie, but he added a lot to... It was well-directed, and there's a turn in it that... It's a predictable turn, but you find out as the main character does, which is kind of a cool thing. Like, it's not spelled out for you, but you can guess the... Ryan Kwanten stars in it, and he nails it, and you can kind of... Your wheels are turning with his. I don't expect that from The Expendables 3, but if it could put Patrick Hughes in the position to make more movies like that, you go from Mel Gibson to this little, well, little-known...
They're both Australian, right? That's how you do it, I guess. I'm sure Sly has seen that movie, Red Hill. Maybe that's it.
He tweeted about it, that's what he talked about was... Sylvester Stallone, he was very excited about this.
When he tweets,
it's pretty ridiculous.
Can you read his tweets, or are they like unintelligible somehow?
It sounds like he's yelling at you, but
excellent.
I mean, Red Hill is what got him this job, and I'm for that because that movie is fantastic. The movie is so good. I mean, I don't care about The Expendables 3, but I'm excited for Patrick
Hughes. You care
about
it more now than you did before.
Yeah, I still probably won't see it, but I want this to skyrocket Patrick Hughes into something else.
And I'll see it regardless of who they choose as a director. In other sequel news, Dodgeball 2, Dodge Harder. 9 years after the original, a writer has been hired to write a sequel to Dodgeball. Clay Tarver has been hired to write the script, which will see Vince Vaughn and Ben Stiller's characters forced to join forces to defeat a mutual foe.
What do you care least about, a Dodgeball sequel or a Zoolander sequel?
A Zoolander sequel.
Ben Stiller just doesn't seem to let these ideas die. Like, you've heard so long about a Zoolander sequel, and now they're going forward with this, which Show West last week, they showed some Walter Mitty footage. And it was instant Oscar buzz. Like, it comes out later this year, but everybody there legitimately thinks when Walter Mitty comes out that Ben Stiller is going to be an Oscar-nominated director. So to see him go from that and see where his career could go to go into acting in Dodgeball 2 and probably directing it, it just doesn't make any sense. Like,
maybe it's something he likes.
That's true.
God forbid somebody do something they like.
I understand that, but it's 9 years. If you liked it that much, why is it taking so long? Zoolander's been even longer.
It took how many years? 10 years to get a Ratchet and Clank movie? I mean, you know, sometimes these projects just take a long time to gestate. It does seem that Dodgeball at this point is sort of an afterthought, but I enjoyed the first one well enough.
I think it hit at the right time. Like, it's one of those that I thought Alan Tudyk was funny. It had its moments. I don't need more.
I don't know that I need more either, but I'm not ready to give it a thumbs down just on spec. So
I am.
That's fine. That's what you're here for. Phil Lord and Chris Miller returning to Jump Street. The duo have signed on to direct the sequel to 21 Jump Street, which is set to film this fall for a June 6th, 2014 release.
This has been kind of happening fast. They said they tried to get the ball rolling and film last September.
Strike while the iron's hot.
Yes, but it didn't happen. And then they just officially announced last week that 21 Jump Street 2 was happening and that they were going to try to get it this September. And then it was up in the air whether these guys were going to come back because they're still doing the Lego movie. It's awesome that they're back, though. I love that they're back and that it gets a prime summer release date. Like, it's going up against one of the big hitters from next year.
Is it Captain America?
No.
Fair enough. I agree. It's good that they're getting the band back together, so to speak. I mean, that was a movie that I think could have gone either way. You know, could have been a real big disappointment. But it was, in addition to not being a disappointment, it was really, really funny. I was surprised at the amount of times that I actually LOL'd during that film. So obviously, you know, the guys can write, you know, bringing back Jonah Hill and Channing Tatum would be great. It's going to feel a little bit rushed if it has to release in a year.
I don't think it's in that bad a shape because it's not, you're not talking something that's going to have a lot of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles is what it's supposed to go up against. One of those will change dates. It really will. But it's not something that's going to need a lot of effects. I could see it being a quick film, but go back to Dodgeball. This is something that hit right. The script that Jonah Hill and Michael Bacall wrote worked perfectly. Channing Tatum and Jonah Hill were great. The direction was good. And now you're striking relatively close enough that now all those pieces, there's a good chance all those pieces could still combine together to duplicate it because it's so close together. But
yeah,
I'm excited.
If you wait 9 years, who knows where Channing Tatum's going to be?
Yeah.
So yeah. So you would say you're probably excited for 21 Jump Street. Are you excited for The Heat and Ride Along? You better be. Because sequels have already been greenlit for the Sandra Bullock, Melissa McCarthy buddy cop movie The Heat and the Kevin Hart Ice Cube buddy movie Ride Along. The Heat releases later this summer, while we won't get to Ride Along with Kevin Hart and The Cube until January. The original writers have been hired for both projects.
It's jumping the gun.
A little bit.
I mean, The Heat's another one of those that I see it doing well.
Yes.
I imagine it will, but it's... Are people ready for
Walmart pre-sales?
But do people want a female? I mean, there is that big question mark. Will a female buddy cop movie work? Everything else about it screams hit, but there is that one question. The Kevin Hart Ice Cube, that makes sense because it's a January release. It's going to make money, but it's still way out there.
That one does seem a little bit, I mean, it's January, which is a good time. I don't know what the budget is for that movie. But, you know, if they could do it for, you know, 30, 40, maybe.
And you're seeing a lot more of the January is generally the dumping ground.
Yeah.
We saw that this year.
Sure.
But you're seeing some studios position a movie that, I mean, I could see a Kevin Hart Ice Cube movie releasing in the summer.
Yeah.
You could put it in the Heat spot, and I still think it's going to do well. But yeah, you take that, you put it in January where
less
it's got
risky.
No competition, it's going to make some money there.
Right.
So it's so weird to me.
So weird that the movies would be greenlit so soon.
But here's the thing, though, is that doesn't mean anything. If you go to Thomas Lennon and Ben Garant, who have written Herbie Fully Loaded, Taxi, both Night at the Museum movies, like the Pacifier.
Squeakle.
No.
They didn't do the Squeakle?
No, the Pacifier. They've written a bunch of these, like, what they consider terrible movies. You know, of all the scripts they've written, what they got paid the most for? Taxi 2. The Queen Latifah Jimmy Fallon movie, they got paid to write that script before. Similar scenario where the studio thought Fallon was hot, Queen Latifah was hot. They greenlit a sequel, paid a bunch of money for the script. The movie ended Fallon's movie career and was an epic bomb of epic proportions, but they still got that money. So it's a similar scenario that I don't understand the need to greenlight something so far out.
I don't know. Maybe if you have to keep everyone involved, that's why you do it. But it does seem a little risky.
I mean, you could be in a position where you're filming Ride Along 2 in January when Ride Along 1 releases.
Yeah, I guess
that's entirely
possible.
So that you could have it out by the next January.
Yeah, they'll just do it like they did The Hobbit. Or make it a whole trilogy, Ride Along 1, 2, and 3. Another movie that got a pretty quick green light, a pretty quick turnaround, and it's not a real big surprise, is Thor 2, The Dark World, green lit pretty early on into the release of Thor. It's got a trailer out this week that, as compared to the first one, has almost 100% more Asgardians.
Yeah, it doesn't show a bunch. Like, it's a teaser. You got Natalie Portman there. It's very Asgardian. I was hoping to see more Dark Elves, see more of Eccleston, but it's a teaser. I'm teased.
Yeah.
It didn't turn me off at all. So
no, and I like, more than Eccleston, you see Hiddleston. And I thought that was kind of cool, the way they're, seems like
little.
They're going to use him. So.
Yeah, so I'm excited for it. The teaser, I wouldn't say it made me more excited, but it definitely didn't make me less excited.
I would say, I mean, I didn't really have any kind of opinions on Thor 2. I haven't really read too much about it, but seeing the trailer, I thought, oh, this could be kind of neat. I like that he's Thor right from the get-go. We got the origin story out of the way. That's always a fun thing in my book. No origin stories, no Asgardians, no hammers in the bling ring, but I do give credit to Paris Hilton and Kirsten Dunst for, you know, really showing up in this movie and kind of signing off on it, because, I mean, their houses were broken into. They were robbed.
But
yet,
some of the members of the actual bling ring are coming out against this movie.
Sure.
It shows a lot more than the teaser. The teaser was just Emma Watson looking hot. This shows a little bit more. I'd assume she's playing the character that had it, the reality show on E, because she has that, like, emptiness to her, to where you look at her and it's like, oh, she's pretty, but she has, there's nothing about her that's appealing. And for Emma Watson to pull that off is impressive. But from the trailer, that's what it looks like. She just looks like a waste of a human being that's super, super hot.
Yeah, like the very last thing you see in the trailer just kind of caps it off. It's like, really?
And her American accent is nailed. She's got like a little Southern California accent. She does well with it.
Were you just trying to do a Southern California
No.
accent? Okay. I thought you were slipping, but that's just fine. Is the next trailer for the East. It is a second trailer for that one. It's the one with Skarsgård and Ellen Page, Britt Marling, where Britt Marling tries to infiltrate some kind of eco-terrorists. This one shows a little bit more.
It shows
of her,
a lot more of the plot.
Yeah,
the
her
teaser
process.
The teaser was pretty much just Ellen Page's voice. This shows a lot more about what the East actually is, what her mission actually is, and you see a little bit of Sarsgaard. I was on board with this from the beginning. Like, I love Britt Marling. Everything she's written is 100% for me. So I was already excited for this. It seems like this has a wider appeal. It feels like this is more of a, you know, has more of a larger audience. It'll appeal to a bigger audience than,
right, than Sound
Another
of My
Earth
Voice.
Or
yeah.
Sound of My Voice. So I like that because I think she is leading lady. Like, I think she's one of the most interesting lead actresses out there right now. So if you could put her in, I mean, she's doing it to herself. Like, she's writing herself great material. I want a lot of people to see her work because I think it deserves to be seen. And I think the first two kind of, they got some love, but they, for the most part, went under the radar.
I think this is the most accessible, definitely. It feels like I've seen this type of movie before. It seems a bit like a spy movie. I mean, essentially, that's what she is. And after seeing the first trailer, having a good idea what the movie was about, this does a good job of setting the tone and making you feel like, all right, you know, this isn't going to be kind of a slow, plotty indie movie. Like, there's
like
going to be
her
some
first
suspense.
Two, yeah.
Exactly. And I like the first two, but they are what they are.
Yeah, no, exactly. I love the first two, but they're not for everybody. This looked like it's going to reach a lot more people.
No, not for everybody. Maybe for some older folks. Next movie feels like it's for younger folks, young adult type folks. It is Tiger Eyes, the adaptation of the Judy Blume book. I got to say, I've never seen a thing that this young Willa Holland has been in before. But in the trailer, she looks like she's going to do an incredible job. It seems like the story for the movie is kind of heavy. It deals a lot with death. And she, you know, in the little bit, the 2 minutes or whatever the trailer is, you know, she's got quite a range of stuff she goes through. And I think she pulls it off pretty believably.
No, I think it's going to be good. I like the Amy Jo Johnson, the Pink Power Ranger, is second build. But I like Judy Blume. Judy Blume has written some amazing books that haven't really made it to the big screen yet. So like a Super Fudge and stuff like that hasn't made it yet, but she wrote the screenplay for this, which is cool. I mean, you're taking one of the best young adult writers ever, not just young adult, like children's writers. This is one of her more intense books, and I think she's the perfect choice to
adapt her own
to
work.
Adapt it.
Yeah.
It looks, I'm not its target audience.
No.
I would watch it.
I kind of said the same thing. I mean, it makes no difference to me whether it's a Judy Blume adaptation or not, but like, I would never have just assumed that it was based off the trailer because it looks like a relatively adult kind of movie. I mean, it deals with some heavy subject matter, but I mean, I'm interested enough in it. I'll give it a shot.
Yeah, the girl was in a Garden Party from 2008, which is pretty, it stars a bunch of teens, but it's not a teen movie. I showed up in Legion, Chasing 3000, Straw Dogs. So, I mean,
She's done some TV work,
a lot
too.
Of TV. That's the OC. Mostly, she's currently on The Arrow. Had a long run on Gossip Girl. So she's quietly built a nice resume already. This might be enough.
Just in
to...
a bunch of stuff I haven't seen.
Yeah.
That's more a me thing than a her thing. I would say that our next trailer succeeds in something that I never thought I would ever be able to say about a movie, let alone a trailer. I just see a trailer for Free Samples. It succeeds in making Jesse Eisenberg look like a straight-up pimp trying to seduce young Jess Wexler. And she's a train wreck, big-time alcoholic, big-time slut. And he's Jesse Eisenberg. And he has, I don't want to spoil it because it's not a laugh out loud moment, but it's like, man, Eisenberg's got some game. But I mean, I think the movie looks kind of interesting where, you know, she's kind of just a complete mess and is helping out running an ice cream truck.
It's a Jess Wexler movie. And, you know, she didn't really, she's on people's radar from Teeth, but never really blew up from that.
She's about to be on everybody's radar.
I think she's got
like four or five movies to come out.
Yeah, and I mean, this looks really good, and it looks like she does awesome with it. And I mean, she's top billed over Jesse Eisenberg and even over Jason Ritter, who's not as impressive, but you could tell this is her movie, and she looks like she has everything it takes to carry it. The plot doesn't seem... It's a slut that's running an ice cream parlor trying to be wooed by a nerdy dude. That none of that screams to me something I want to see, but the trailer alone, I want to see it. Even if it's just for her performance, because she looks good. It looks like she's going to be good in it, and it's the kind of movie that it could build into something for her.
It seems like that would be a fun summer movie.
Yeah, it does.
Maybe next year. A fun summer movie for this year is Guillermo del Toro's Pacific Rim, which released some footage from WonderCon this week, and I think it's a wonder Dave didn't have some kind of an aneurysm or his head just blow up. Maybe his face gets smashed.
I was
from
pretty
watching
excited.
It. Yeah, he was pretty excited.
The first trailer was pretty exciting for me. This one was even more. Like, this one was showed more monster versus robot, showed a lot of monsters, showed more Charlie Day, more Idris Elba. I was already on board with this movie, but this one,
I think that's kind of the thing is we're both already on board. We were both already on board. I don't know that you've got our money. I don't need to see anymore. I'd rather that footage was awesome. I'm cool with seeing it for the first time in the theater. That would have been fine. I don't need any more convincing. Now, maybe more people do, and this movie's got to make a lot of money, but... I liked watching the trailer, but I almost wish I hadn't seen it now.
But you, for somebody not us,
sure,
who this movie isn't on their radar, this trailer does a better job than the last one.
Yeah, I guess it probably
like,
does.
Like, this is going to get the more random people into the seats because it's awesome.
It is.
Aircraft carrier is a baseball bat? Sign me up. Huh? It could be just that. I mean, that's... Yes. That's... That just goes back to the shot of you get the District 9 trailer at that moment where he reaches up and catches the missile,
mm-hmm.
where it's like, I was already on board, but that's an... Although, when you see the movie, I wish that shot wasn't in the trailer, because kind of kills a huge moment.
Sure.
But I don't think aircraft carrier's baseball bat's going to kill
probably
that kind of moment.
I don't think will be any real concern of whether or not the giant robot is going to die. Any rate, maybe I wish I hadn't seen it. The next trailer, short, sweet... To the point, I don't feel like it gives away a whole lot. It's for Prince Avalanche, which is Paul Rudd and Emil Hirsch. I guess they're painting lines.
Directed by David Gordon Green.
Yeah.
This is the one where, I mean, David Gordon Green is a big-time director now. Paul Rudd's headlining major movies. They kind of went and just filmed this quietly. This was very much ado about nothing, to where they kind of... It was already filming before anybody caught wind of it. It looks fantastic. It's a remake of a... Swedish film, maybe? It's like a road trippy kind of...
Starring Mads Mikkelsen?
I wish. Yeah. No, it looks good, because it's not Paul Rudd as what Paul Rudd is falling into playing every time.
It's a different Paul Rudd.
It's like a Paul Rudd from early 2000s, where it's still Paul Rudd, but it's not this sweet, charming Paul Rudd. Like, he's still Paul Rudd, but
he's
not...
more offbeat, I think.
Yeah, and...
And Emil Hirsch looks like he can totally keep up.
I don't like Emil Hirsch.
I do.
This might pull the Channing Tatum turn, the McAvoy turn. Like,
McAvoy turn, yeah.
He looks really good in this. And I mean, it looks like it's going to be... it look, I mean, Paul Rudd's the straight guy. Like, it looks like the comedic potential is going to be, you're going to have Paul Rudd's dry and then Emile Hirsch's slapstick. And it looks good. And put that in the hands of David Gordon Green, which he's such an interesting director. And I'd much rather see him do stuff like this than, as much as I love Pineapple Express and Your Highness, I'd much rather see him go back, because this is a middle ground between his George Washington and his early stuff and the later stuff. This like meets him in the middle, and I think that's where he's perfect.
Yeah, I mean, this has got, you know, people. This has got Paul Rudd, so it's got your name recognition, and it also looks really, really good. So take a look at those trailers. Let us know what you think. If you're into Prince Avalanche, or if you know what movie it's a remake of, we'd love to hear about it. You can send it to us, moviesonup@gmail.com. Get at us on the Facebook, facebook.com/moviesonup, or the Twitter, twitter.com/moviesonup. Coming to the theaters this week, this section will be ridiculously short because there really is only one. It's Iron Man 3.
Nothing else matters.
Do you want to set the over-under at 50?
What?
I'm kidding.
125.
I'm going to take the over.
I almost set the over-under at 150. Because
that would have been a tough one.
But I think it's in that. I think it's close. I really do. I mean, Avengers did 200. This is essentially a sequel to
Avengers
that.
Avengers Light?
Yeah, this is a sequel to that.
Sure.
This, people have forgot. I mean, Iron Man 2, I think that bad taste is out of people's mouths.
Agreed.
150 is reasonable. I'm going to go 125. I'm going to take the over.
Well, I would say you probably would have to, based off of what you just said.
Because I don't know that I would take the over at 150.
Well, I don't think I would either.
140.
You already said it at 125.
I would take the over at 140.
I'd probably take the under. But I feel like, you know, if we're playing blackjack, I feel like at 140, I'm sitting at 18. And I'm like, I'll take my
There's no way this movie doesn't make $1 billion world, like, considering worldwide.
It's already
made
a quarter of that.
It already made 200.
Yeah.
So it's officially summer.
It is officially summer. In case you don't get around to seeing Iron Man this week, new to DVD this week, Broken City, Silver Linings Playbook finally gets its DVD release, and The Guilt Trip. Let's see, if you're not going to watch any of those, if you're not going to go see Iron Man 3, what the hell is wrong with you? What are you going to be watching this week, Dave? Give the folks a watch this suggestion.
I'm going to throw out, kind of plucked it from, we briefly mentioned Ophelia Lovelbond in the Guardians of the Galaxy story. So, 4-3-2-1. She's one of the four girls in it. It's her, Emma Roberts, written and directed by Noel Clark, who's one of my favorite actors that's doing work over in Britain. It's not a great movie, but it's interesting enough. It's a fun watch, and how it all comes together. It's fun to watch play out. She's really good in it. Emma Roberts is good in it. Everybody's really good in it, and it's fun to see it unfold.
You mentioned my watch this a little bit earlier when we were talking about Jess Wexler. I've talked about Teeth before. I think it's kind of an interesting take on a horror movie. I mean, I think the idea in itself is cringeworthy enough, and I think they do a decent job, because that could have turned into a trauma movie, but it didn't. So, I mean, I give the filmmakers a lot of credit for that, and I think it's still a decent enough movie, and she does carry it.
And a lot of why it doesn't elevate into that ridiculous is because Jess Wexler is so good in it.
Right.
Like, she does carry that movie, and that's why I was so drawn to the Free Samples trailer, because it's weird that it's taken this long. I haven't seen her carry any movies since then. So,
I mean, she's done some TV stuff. She's been on quite a lot of TV.
Yeah, but I mean, she carried that movie. It's a weird concept that could go really, really bad or be a lot of fun. And not solely because of her, large part because of her. It was a lot of fun, and I'm excited for her. So I had 4-3-2-1. Teeth is a good one. I'm going to throw Red Hill out there again. I talked about it a little bit with Patrick Hughes. It's just a really good movie.
So we've got a bonus. Would you say bonus? Watch this.
I wouldn't say
for this
that.
Week. You wouldn't say that? No. But you will be saying that in a couple minutes here as we record our next episode for the week. It will be our box office bash draft. Dave and I are going to do. We're also going to read some listeners' lists. You can check that out probably Wednesday or Thursday of this week. If you haven't given us your box office bash submission yet, you're on the clock, but you've still got some time. Get it to us here ASAP. And if we get it, before probably Thursday. We'll put it in contention, and you know, I don't know if we're going to...
We're going to throw it all up on the site.
On a blog post? So
yeah, we're going to wait till Friday to do it so that you're not mooching off other people's picks.
Fair enough. So, yeah, you'll have another episode from us later in the week. You'll have a blog post so everybody can see all the watch, the box office bash stuff. So Dave and I have got a busy week ahead of us. Be a busy week for us next week as well.
Next week, I'm excited. Next week marks 52 episodes. Well, our 52nd sort week of. Doing this. Yeah. So because we started doing two episodes a week, a little bit more than 52. But that's 1 year. I guess technically 53 would be 1 year. But we're celebrating it next week. So what we're doing next week, there's going to be the regular news episode. But instead of recording a new discussion episode, we're going to go back from the past year of shows and pick, I think we have 5 episodes that we're going to cut out the discussion parts from and just record a new intro to those and just kind of highlight some of those discussions and cringe as we listen to us 48 weeks ago.
I listened to most of them last night already when I was pulling out the discussions. And truth be told, some of them aren't very long. There'll be one... I think our discussion portion is maybe about 10 minutes. So out of the 50 or out of the 5 that we have next week that we're going to re-release, you know, it may only be about 40 minutes of actual show.
So there'll be 5 extra bonus episodes, but they're going to be like mini episodes.
Yeah, exactly.
And I don't care if we can let it out. They're going to be movies we want to see remade.
Yeah. Chick flicks.
Oh, did we do chick flicks?
We did chick flicks. We did
movies we
from our childhood.
Yes. There's a couple more.
There's a we have a technical discussion where we talk a little about The Hobbit and some of the.
Oh, is that one of them?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that was one of the shorter ones. But yeah, so we've got some kind of blast from the past stuff coming back from you for next week. You know, it's if you missed any of those episodes,
everything is on the website.
Yeah, everything's on the website. You can listen to them in their entirety, or you know, if this especially if you happen to like what you hear. When we re-release them next week, go back, listen to the whole episode. If not, you know, it's if you don't necessarily love the news format, you're probably not listening to this one. But this would be a good way to at least get the discussion part out of a news episode. Yeah, it's like the cream at the middle of the Oreos.
You can get every episode from moviesonup.com. iTunes has the most recent 50. So you can get, I mean, they're out there. You can find them.
And they're sorted pretty easily, too. Combing back through the archives last night, it really wasn't all that difficult. They're all right there for you. So that's what we got coming up here the next couple of weeks. But until later on in the week...
You can find me at Dave Bissell on Twitter. I have another show, EricAndDaveTalking.com, or Eric and Dave Talking with Eric and Dave. You can find that at EricAndDave.com. That's Eric with a K. If you want to listen to another podcast, want to hear me talk to somebody else, I'm on an episode of Joey Ritter's podcast this week. You can find that at JoeyRitter.com. There's either the video you can watch on YouTube or download it as a podcast.
You know all the ways you can get to us. I will reiterate nonetheless. You can send us an email. Send us your box office bash submission. If you haven't already done so, moviesonup@gmail.com. There's the Facebook page, which is facebook.com/moviesonup. Give us a like. Why don't you like us? You really, really should like us. Tweet directly at Dave at Movies On Up on the Twitter. You can leave us an iTunes review. We would love some of those. We are also on the Stitcher. That's kind of a popular podcasting application, which we can now be found on along with iTunes. We are pretty much everywhere. And as Dave mentioned, all of our, not only our episodes, but all of our blog posts can be found at moviesonup.com. Dave's got an interesting one about casting the Fantastic Four, which he did a while back. It's a really good one. I've got some things that I learned from doing our summer preview issue. You can find all of those things at moviesonup.com, where you can find our next episode. And until you do hear that next one,
keep it up.